Hello and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And today on the show we're talking about ghost houses. No, not the ones you used to go to at the local AMP show. We're talking about vacant homes and unoccupied homes that are all around New Zealand, because at the last census, this is back in 2018, there were a total of 196,000 homes, or just over that, that were left unoccupied at the time of the census. And one of the policies, or one of the questions that are being raised by councils and the government around the country is, well, can we get people living in these 195,000 homes or 196,000 homes? Couldn't we fill them with people who need housing, like homeless people or people who are struggling to find properties to rent? And so we've gone away to look at the data and think about this and start to question it, because in theory, oh, what a great idea. There are almost 200,000 vacant properties, nobody living in them. Let's just put somebody in there, and wouldn't that be a good idea? Now, Andrew, talk to us. What do you think about that?
So this all came up because Ed and I were talking the other day, and I said that he mentioned one of the political policies around wanting to fill up vacant houses. He said, well, there can't be very many of them. And I said, actually, I remember in the census there were actually quite a surprisingly high number of vacant houses. I was amazed at the number of houses that were sitting there vacant. But then when you break it down, there's things like holiday homes. And so they, whether or not they fall into the category and people's batches, and then you've got the odd person that maybe has two homes, someone who has got a home in Auckland and a home in Queenstown, and they don't want someone else living in there because, you know, they are talking about using these for people who are maybe on lower incomes and or some homeless people. And I do think we've got a major homelessness issue in New Zealand that we have to address. We don't want homeless people. We want to be able to provide people with shelter. But I don't know that the guy that owns a house in Queenstown and Auckland wants to rent it out to some homeless people. He wants to be able to go there himself at any time, right? And so the Auckland Council, they were talking about there being a rise from the last census to the one before, 6.6% to 7.3%, around 40,000 properties which are sitting there unused. So they talked about, well, how do we figure out which of these properties are not being used and where is the low-hanging fruit? And so the first idea that they had was to speak to power companies and find out, you know, if a house isn't using any power, then it's probably vacant. So maybe we can contact them. But of course, then there's privacy issues there. You can't give a list of people not using power to the government and then they contact them. The power company has to contact them themselves and ask them whether or not, you know, they'd be interested in something like this. Then one of the other comments that they said is that most of the properties that we're talking about here in Northern Beach suburbs and Waiheke Island, so it's whether or not they are practical to be used for either homeless or the other people that they were hoping to help out were middle-income workers like teachers, nurses and police officers who are struggling to find affordable accommodation, which again, sounds great, but whether or not these properties that they're finding and identifying as vacant are actually able to be used for this purpose, I don't know.
And then two comments I just want to walk through there in terms of practicality. So if we're talking about a middle income earner being able to go and fill a vacant property, there are really two types of vacant properties in essence, and we are generalizing here. One, you've got rundown places which you would typically expect to be vacant. So we're talking about properties that somebody's purchased, an investor's purchased, and they've just left it there because they're looking for long-term capital gains. It might be on a subdividable section that they think, God, I'm going to make a lot of money one day, but I'm just going to leave it there. So really rundown property.
Basically land bankers.
Yeah. Now that is not going to be suitable for your middle income earner who doesn't want to live in a rundown house. The other option are people who are really wealthy, and perhaps you live 6 months over here and you live 6 months overseas. And in that instance, a middle income worker isn't going to be able to afford the rent that would actually make somebody, a very wealthy person, interested in renting out their $2 million Ponsonby villa to a middle income person. And it's got nothing to do with the quality of character of the middle income person. It's just the level of rent that would need to be paid in order to be able to make that person interested.
Plus, if they've got furniture and stuff like that in the house, I mean, they're probably not going to want to drag it out for 6 months of the year. It's impractical.
Or their family photos.
Correct. And see, also the other thing around the properties which are a bit more run down, that for the investor who is basically just land banking, or they might be planning to develop the site, and so there might be a 6 month window before that development works. Well, is it worth actually putting someone in for 6 months? And now with new regulation, am I able to put someone in there for 6 months and then get rid of them after 6 months? Maybe, maybe not. And does the house comply with Healthy Homes Act? Probably not. And do I want to spend $5,000 to get it compliant only to get $10,000 worth of rent? Probably not.
And just in terms of that, the discussion around healthy homes. So if we're talking about very large properties or properties that are very high spec, not complying with Healthy Homes Act, there may be an instance where some of these properties wouldn't comply with Healthy Homes. Because if you have a large open plan area and your main lounge also has a big open staircase, a heat pump under the Healthy Homes Act has to be able to heat the whole room all the way up the stairs in the big open plan space to a certain temperature. Now, that may not be practical, and that's actually a really good example, Andrew, of where a very high spec home that you'd think, well, that's warm and dry, wouldn't actually comply with the standard that has been introduced. Now, the reason we're talking about this as well is that it's been mooted that perhaps, and this kind of comes off what the top party policy was that we recently talked about, was that they've considered, or there was a consideration about, should we tax vacant properties? Now, the tax working group that came out a couple of years ago, as well as Megan Woods, the housing minister, said that this probably wasn't actually practical to introduce for a host of reasons, such as that it's going to be levied against holiday homes and very wealthy people, as opposed to really targeting the problem that we're thinking about, which is people not wanting to rent out their properties simply because they'd rather land bank instead. But look, it can be a bit of an issue. Even down here in Christchurch, if we think commercially, we've got next to our office, Andrew, there is a vacant plot of land that is owned by a very wealthy overseas investor who's doing nothing with it. It's right in the middle of Christchurch. You could build a lovely building there and have some new office space in there. You could have some increased retail space, but it's just left vacant because that investor happens to be land banking. And while you might say, well, that land's not being used, at the same time, that person's purchased the land. It's their right, in my view, to be able to do whatever they want with it. It's their land.
And this is the thing. We exist in a free market where people have got the ability to choose. And if someone comes along and offers a reasonable price, I guarantee you that person will sell it. And then someone else can develop it. So if someone else has the ability to generate more income, or if someone sitting on a vacant property has the ability to get some rent that they think, actually, this makes it worth my while, then they'll do that. It's just that the right value isn't there, and maybe there are restrictions in place that are stopping them doing that.
And I think it is very attractive to start to erode people's property rights, because you do think, well, you know, if there are 196,000 properties that are vacant, well, let's just legislate that these people have to let it out. But you've also got to think, well, somebody owns the land, they own it. And it's very strange in this country and around the world, actually, that we treat housing in a very different way to all other asset types. If I buy a bag of chips, and I know people would criticise this analogy simply because obviously you don't need a bag of chips and it costs you $2, or it costs you $6 if you buy the chips that I buy, not quite $5. They're not a necessity, whereas housing is a necessity. But here's the point here. There are so many goods, so many asset types that we don't erode property rights of. If I buy shares, you don't legislate what I have to do with those shares. You don't legislate how I have to vote at a shareholders meeting or an annual general meeting. But with property, we tend to treat it so differently because there is this emotional connection to it. Yes, it's a necessity, but also somebody owns that. They've got the right to do what they want with it. And I think it's very important to realize as well that the reason that this specific tax that we've talked about wouldn't get introduced is that last year, Productivity Commission study actually said that, look, a vacant land tax would only have a small and transitory effect, because simply there aren't that many true land bankers that don't have tenants within their property. Most investors would rather have some income coming in from a tenant, and all of the unoccupied properties typically tend to be holiday homes or owner occupiers that they're just not using.
And I agree with your point, Ed. Just because there's a housing issue, and we do have a housing shortage in New Zealand, we can't go and take away someone's right to do what they want with their asset just because there's an issue. You can't do that. You can't strip people of their rights. What we have to do is address the issue and find a way of making it easier for there to be housing. So we do that by making it easier to develop land. We make it easier and faster for people to get through council. I'm dealing with a number of developers right now who are finding it really challenging getting things signed off with council, because you've got two sections. You've got your resource consent, then you have to get signed off by the urban design panel, and they decide the aesthetics. And if the aesthetics don't suit them, then your resource consent basically goes on hold, which is ridiculous. If you get resource consent, you should be allowed to build the building. It shouldn't matter about the aesthetics. The aesthetics is decided by who buys it. And if someone wants to buy it, they've got every right to buy it. And if someone builds something ugly, they're not going to buy it.
If somebody decided the aesthetics of what I wear every day, Andrew, I wouldn't be able to wear anything to work. Now, the last thing I just want to be able to talk about is a comment that I saw in one of the articles that we've researched by a founder of a charity, very well-meaning charity, that is an advocacy group for homelessness. And absolutely go and advocate for homelessness. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have groups that don't advocate for homelessness, but they've talked about pushing a tax through in order to be able to encourage these vacant properties to then be rented by people and trying to push them back onto the market. But I think what's really important to remember is that, and this is a personal thing for me, I definitely subscribe to the Peter Dunn approach to taxation. So he was the Minister of Revenue for many, many, many years when he was the leader of the United Future Party. And his approach always was, you use tax to be able to pay for the policies of the government. You don't use tax in order to be able to change the market or to drive social policy through by taxing one group or more. You derive your social policies as separate from your taxation policies, because the purpose of tax is to fund the government. And I think it's really dangerous when we start to see, and I realise that this is getting a bit political, but we're a property podcast. We're talking about the potential taxes that are going to potentially affect you in terms of your property ownership and your property investing. But I think it's really important not to try and drive social policy through tax when there's no plan for how you're actually going to spend that tax necessarily. Fantastic. Let's wrap it up there. But please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. It really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, if you want to learn more about property with Andrew and I, why not check out our epic guide to property investment? This is a 16,000 word article that we have written to teach you the fundamentals of property investment. Now, I'm going to drop a link to that in the show notes, or just Google property investment. It's usually the first thing that comes up once you scroll past the ads. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.